They've been dealing with these slimy attorneys and these cheesy judges. You know, they have been out there dealing with even the politicians and getting the politicians to recognize what's right in these situations and to support the rights of tenants in Santa Cruz, at least the extent of funding a storefront for them, or at least a beginning of that kind of funding. That series of rights which you have in terms of habitability as a tenant seems to me very important. And again, where can folks who didn't catch all that or want to hear it repeated pick up that information again, Donna?
426-0644.
That's the number, the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, or you can go to the, presumably, the law library and look in, what's the book you were reading from?
The Tenants' Rights Handbook.
The Tenants' Rights Handbook. Just go to the basement of the county building, go to the law library, that's during, I guess, between 8 to 5. Ask the secretary there to direct you to the Tenants' Rights Handbook. And then look under, habitability?
Is there a chapter on that? Okay. Under habitability, I guess there's a chapter on that. It's pretty easy to read the book, and it's well organized, so it shouldn't be hard to find whatever you want to find. One other thing I want to add.
Don't steal the books.
Yes, they have been stolen by irate tenants, supposedly, in desperate need. We got a call this morning from a student at Cabrillo College in a small business class. She mentioned the Tenants' Rights Union, and there was almost a riot.
In what way was there almost a riot?
Everybody had something to say about it, and the instructor, like the law instructors that we've met, seemed to be very much right-wing interested in maintaining the free market economy as a solution to our problems. And
the free market economy, we call that the market where you pay and they profit.
And the instructor actually said that the little people are protected by the courts anyway. That's news to us, right, guys?
Now tell us, in fact, Donna, you've been watching the courts. How don't the courts protect tenants?
Well, the law is structured to where a landlord is entitled to his property and possession of his property, and he's not upheld in any kind of standard of human behavior that's recognizable in a human being in many cases. I'm not saying all landlords are slumlords, but we've run into some that would shock most people out there.
Well, I know you've said that certainly you've listed the rights, the habitability rights, proper expectations tenants have here in California. Are you saying that the courts will enforce those, or they won't? I mean, isn't that law professor just saying that, gosh, there are all these rights tenants have? What are they bitching about?
Well, they think that somehow people evidently are protected by legal aid, which is not the case because they don't have the money to represent people in court, which is where they're most needed, and they're also overburdened. And there's a lot of cases they just won't take because they know how the courts are going to rule, and there are cases that we've actually won that they couldn't take the time to help win.
So, in essence, what you're saying is that citizens need to get together themselves to begin to deal with these kinds of questions, to form tenants' unions, to form citizens' response groups, so that the government groups, which are essentially being denuded by cutbacks, which are kind of timid anyway in this whole issue in Santa Cruz because of political connections and involvements, since they don't take that responsibility, it's up to people to help themselves by getting together with groups like the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz?
And don't be intimidated, and don't think the law is some kind of authority that you can't get a hold of with your hands and use for your own protection and your own empowerment.
We support a real pro-poor stance, such as what B.E. Smith is advocating, and so we'd like to get together with people out there who are listening, who are involved in that aspect too, because we're looking to form a pro-poor society. And thank you all. Don't forget to call us at 426-0644. Tell a friend.
Hey, and tell a number of friends. We have reached nearly the end of our show. Uncle Dennis is coming on next with Earth First and updates on environmental realities, activism, and what those sleazeballs up north are doing. I want to know what's going on. Actually, I haven't conferred with Dennis about what's happening. What's coming up next, Dennis?
Well, tonight we're having a special show on the environment and population. We're going to have a special guest tonight. Pat Kittle is going to be here, and we're going to talk over how numbers of people are affecting the environment. So stay tuned for Earth First Radio coming up next. Thanks, Bob.
Yay. And come back on Sunday. Thank you, Donna. Thank you, Marco. Again, 426-0644 is the number to call for the Tenants Union. Bathrop Spears Broadsides returns on Sunday at 11 o'clock at the same 96.3 FM spot on your radio dial. Again, I remind you, if you want to come to the gathering in remembrance of Tama Pearlman, that's 3:30 p.m. Saturday, 2566 Parker Street off Soquel Drive near Skyview Drive and near the corner of Soquel and Winkle. For more information, call 479-1503. And if you have missed any phone numbers this hour and want information on them, all you got to do is give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll give you the numbers, and you can just take it from there. I'm going to sign off without music. I'm out of time. We're going straight into Earth First, and thank you for being with us.
Our house? I think the service did, whoever was the landlord did, yeah. But we have she has a lot of friends. Someone's going to find her place.
I hope so. Proceeding to that, the district attorney, or let's say the police department, has not released the statements of the officers, the interrogations, the tapes.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that they're trying to get their story straight. And then maybe there's one officer who didn't actually see things the way that they're describing them.
Trying to iron things out.
Yeah.
So everything will be neat.
Yes.
Have you yourself, do you feel that you are hostile to the police department, neutral, pro-police? Do you have any position on
that? I'm totally neutral. And when I was in the Air Force, I was in security police in the Air Force, so totally neutral. Has nothing. I've never had any problem with the police.
How long have you lived in this area?
I've lived in this area since the late 50s, so I've lived in this area a long time. I grew up in Los Gatos.
And how old are you?
I'm 45.
And I'm running out of questions here. Again, your name is?
Don Paul.
Well, Don, thank you, and we'll be broadcasting on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
It's Sunday at 6 o'clock. It's daylight out. This thing only had to do, she said everything was fine. All we had to do was just, could you have him just come out and talk to us? That's all that should have happened. It was obvious when they got there, they didn't hear any yelling or screaming. So all they had to do was ask, could you bring him out here so we could talk to him? The whole thing. One of the
next door neighbors looked across the street and said she saw the police officers pulling out their batons, putting on gloves, and as she put it, pumping themselves up. What's your reaction when you hear that?
Well, you think that they were anticipating, a bad situation before they even went in.
And perhaps, I don't want to put any words in your mouth. Yeah. Thanks.
Here with Laura Anderson, just looked at the press release. What are the things about it?
So there appeared any corrections that you would make in that release. This is an early release, so it doesn't contain, we did it 2 days after the actual shooting.
Yeah, there's a few things that, he didn't push me, and he didn't have his foot in the door. A lot of people are saying that he had his foot in the door because he didn't have his foot in the door, because I almost closed the door on him, so I know his foot couldn't have been there.
Mm-hmm.
But when he did give the final push, and he didn't push me, he just grabbed my wrist and held my arms up and pushed me and stepped me back, like 4 steps into my living room.
What did he say to you before he came in?
Nothing, and I said nothing.
No explanation?
No, just grabbed me and held me in the middle of the living room with my arms up above my head.
Were your voices raised before this happened? Were you having an argument of some sort of any kind?
At that time, the argument had calmed down by then. Brian had already gotten himself a drink of water, and we were checking on Hannah, because we were upstairs. And then when we came down to check on Hannah, because she was asleep in bed, that's when I noticed the police were here, because I didn't hear him upstairs, being upstairs. I couldn't hear anyone knocking or anything.
Your door was locked, and then you came downstairs, or your door was open?
I don't think it was locked, no.
But they didn't open it?
They didn't open it, no.
They knocked?
No, they never knocked. I never heard a knock.
So, how do you know the police were out there? What was there?
Because I saw them through the window. I went and looked through the window and saw them by the door, three of them.
And so, you opened the door having seen them through the window?
No, I said everything was okay.
Oh, you went up to the window and you spoke through the window?
Yeah.
I said, the upstairs window?
No, it's downstairs. I said everything was okay, yeah.
What did they say?
He says to open the door. He asked me to open the door, please.
Which officer said that?
Grosso?
Garasio. And what did you say to him?
What did I say? I said, no, thanks. No, I don't think I really want to, or I don't remember. Yeah.
Were you a different...
But since I didn't want to really open the door, and he said, please, we need you to open the door. And so I cracked it open.
You cracked it up, at which point he simply...
He pushed on it, and then I pushed back, and almost had it locked, and then he pushed harder.
And then what happened?
And then that's when he grabbed me and pushed my arms up, and I went back about up 2-3 feet into the living room.
Then what happened?
Then that's when Brian came running down the stairs.
Did you see Brian carrying anything?
No, I didn't. No.
What did the other officers do, or did you see them?
You know, at that point, it went really fast. All I know is Brian ran outside. I don't even know if he approached the officer that was holding me. All I know is the officer let go of my wrist at that point, and I backed up about a step or two because I was worried about my daughter still being in the bed. I just wanted to stay near her.
And your daughter, where was the bed with respect to?
Right behind me, in the same floor.
And the stairway led down perpendicular, or if I'm opening the door and you're Officer Garasio,
it was parallel. The stairs are the same. Come down the same direction that the living room and the kitchen are.
So let's suppose I'm Garasio and you're opening the door. I push you in. Where's the stairway? Is it right directly behind you?
No, it would be in front of him to his right.
This way?
Yeah.
Okay. And
there's no room to swing. Brian did not swing because if he did, he would have hit the pole or a wall.
So the claim that Garasio makes that he was hit on his hand in the house, which is at least the claim that appears in the Mercury News of Wednesday, is not accurate.
No, that's not accurate.
Did you have any sense at all that any swinging took place in the house?
No, because nothing, he would have had to hit something because our place is very small. It's a studio. Mm-hmm. And he would have had to hit something else to make a full swing, and I didn't even see anything in Brian's arms. Yeah.
You're listening to an interview with Lori Andrus, recorded 2 days ago in the corridors of the Halls of Justice at the courthouse outside courtroom 6, where Brian Andrus was arraigned on, I think it was 4 felony counts of assaulting an officer and a probation violation. I could have that number wrong. We are interrupting this segment, which has numerous interviews, including a very important interview with, and the first ever interview with Lori Andrus, that has been broadcast publicly, in order to, well, we're going to postpone it for an hour. And the reason for that is this show lasts 2.5 hours, and most folks usually tune in at 11. But since daylight savings time began today, for most folks, it's still like 10:15. Actually, however, if you look at your clock, it's 11:15 if you're setting it properly. And to make sure that our usual listeners are able to catch this really important interview, we're going to repeat a little of it, and we'll start doing that at probably around noon or shortly thereafter, in about 45 minutes to an hour. And until then, we're going to be playing equally important stuff as far as the general scene goes, but I do want to wait on this Lori Andrus hearing. Lori Andrus, of course, is the wife of Brian Andrus, who was shot 4 or 5 times by the police, allegedly for striking them with a baseball bat in an incident so far which has been seen only by police officers, and all other witnesses saw no such striking occur. So this is an interesting question. Also, as I mentioned before, Police Chief Belcher has refused to allow this complaint to go to the Citizens Police Review Board, the complaint about excessive force. So we'll be resuming this analysis and this investigation, and you'll be able to hear these voices, these opinions, these eyewitnesses, starting around noon in about 45 minutes. And if you have any comments on what you've already heard, of course, give a call to 423-5361. That's a Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 you're listening to. Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcasts continuously from Santa Cruz. We are interested in public service announcements. If you have anything you want to put on the air, give us a call at our voicemail at 427-4523 or our email, frsc@cruzio.com,
frsc@cruzio.com, or our address, Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061, Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. We have a caller.
Hi, caller.
Hello, Robert.
Hey there.
Good show.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
I haven't heard that interview before.
I guess this isn't Reverend Bob, but this is Skidmark Bob.
Yeah, I was a reverend this morning, though.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The Church of the Reboon.
Yes. I wanted to bring up a point that those very officers are starting work tonight, as a matter of fact.
You're talking about Sergeant Hennig, Officer Garacio, and who's the Officer Samanek, I guess?
Warren Berry.
Officer Berry. Berry.
Mm-hmm. Which I ran into yesterday with his little child, I think he has a 6-month-year-old baby or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get a chance to really talk to him, but he said he was starting work. I wanted to ask him why, if it was his bullet that went into the child's room and mm-hmm. struck the wall. But I didn't get a chance to do that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I will next time.
Please.
But, this whole thing is just a little out of control, and it shows how the police can go ahead and censor everything up, even up to the Sentinel, sending Karen Clark out there to do a story, rather than someone like Mae Wong or somebody who might write down something a little different than pro-police.
It's interesting, the first story that came out on, I guess, the Monday Sentinel that followed the Sunday shooting was a Karen Clark story, and it's interesting, I have become so cynical about Karen Clark that as she stood there interviewing witnesses, I told them, not much of what you say is going to get into the paper, and if it does, it's going to be with a pro-police slant. That is my fear, and I'm afraid my fear was borne out by her story, which we did a sort of an analysis on about a week later, although it really deserves further analysis. But then the next day, Mae Wong's story came out, which actually had a sort of an interview with Lori Andrus,
right,
which, it gave us somewhat, at least some more facts. Or some more a different perspective.
Yeah, if Karen wrote it, you wouldn't have saw that. You wouldn't have saw an interview with his wife.
Sentinel writer Karen Clark is not only, in my opinion, seriously biased on police issues in favor of simply, rubber stamping what the police department does.
Right.
But she also has taken a really proactive stance in our campaign to repeal the sleeping ban by making sure that the word sleeping ban do not appear in the Sentinel, except possibly in the letters columns. Uh-huh. So, for instance, when we have public announcements, she calls it the camping ban, which is really a somewhat different issue, a broader issue, and one that there's a lot stronger feeling on and a lot more fear around eliminating the camping ban as a sort of, people have visions of people setting up tents all over town, whereas the sleeping ban is clearly a more human rights issue because people have to sleep regardless of whether they can set up a tent or a stove or so forth, but Karen has always referred to it as the camping ban. Even when we had a press release that specifically, had the name of our organization, the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, she omitted the name of the organization and talked about the camping ban. She took the story over from the original writer who was supposed to do it, took it out of her hands. Deborah Petit was the original writer, and said that she would take care of it. We asked Petit for a retraction, we asked Clark for a retraction, we asked their editors for a retraction, we didn't get anything of the kind.
Yeah.
And we went to the city attorney, John Barisone, who said, hey, if they are if they're referring to it by the wrong name, that is legally actionable. And so who knows, if we'll find a sympathetic attorney, we may try to hold the Sentinel to, fair coverage, at least in terms of the name of our organization and what we're doing, but then, of course, they can refuse to cover it entirely, which is probably what they'll do, but that might all be for the best,
Right.
But you're a cop watcher, Bob. Do you have any other reports or any other thoughts on this Brian Andrus shooting?
It's just that, a day later, the sheriff had to deal with a knife-wielding person up in Boulder Creek, and they merely maced him with pepper spray and took him into custody rather than shooting 10 bullets or 12 bullets. I'm not sure exactly how many shots it was. I think it was 10. Mm-hmm. And at somebody in the back. So I don't know how that happened either. He got shot him in the back.
Brian Andrus got shot in the back.
Yeah, he got shot from the behind. Mm-hmm. So he got in the back of his leg and his back.
Well, perhaps he was assaulting them with his shoulder blades.
Yeah, well, this bat, I don't know where it came from. Maybe he had it. Maybe necessarily didn't swing, or maybe he did. I mean, if these cops are just entering your home without a warrant, with you telling them they can't enter in, without any kind of explanation or anything, they just come in because they think they can. then why can't we defend ourselves, you know, and I'm sure that might be shown in court here.
Well, what Lori Andrus said, and was confirmed by police officers, is that, I believe it was confirmed, but it was at least it came out in Mei Wong's Sentinel story, as well as in my interview with her, that she was grabbed by Officer Durazio and jacked up, shoved back by the arms,
uh-huh.
In a painful fashion. She screamed, and at that point, Brian Andrus, who'd been upstairs, came charging down, very upset. And that's what precipitated the confrontation. So there's, you know, there's a real question about police practices and procedure here,
right.
If not the individual judgments of some of these officers who, if we also listen to the witnesses from across the street, were getting ready to, you know, to whip out their billy clubs, and
right.
Had whipped out their billy clubs, were putting on their gloves, were pumping themselves up, didn't use a loudspeaker, didn't attempt to communicate by phone or talk, even, I mean, they could be heard even without a loudspeaker if they spoke. The excuse that they had to rush in to stop violence when they could see that the woman involved was not violent, you know, was not being hurt, because she, you know, she did open the door slightly, is, you know, sounds pretty thin to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when she's not in danger and she, you know, she didn't appear, I guess she didn't have any bruises or whatever, I'm not sure what exactly happened, but their practices have got to be honed, or something's got to, they got to deal with it, whether, you know, they jump out of a car and shoot someone down because they told them to fuck off on SoCal or whatever, I don't know, but
that was the Happy John Dine case you're talking about,
right,
where John Dine was shot twice, you know, fatally by Officer Connor Carey in November,
right,
and the whole matter first became the DA police chief's story that Dine was pointing what appeared to be a weapon and holding a combat stance and being aggressive, all of which was denied by every non-police witness,
mm-hmm.
non-police associated witness, and then the CPRB, noticing these discrepancies, said, let's consider this other story by Officer Connor Carey that he was just drawing or reaching for a gun, and that will resolve all these problems.
Right.
But it didn't resolve the problem. The question of how can the police department and the DA's office put out these statements that are never repudiated?
Right.
That, you know, that here's Dine holding a weapon in his hand. It's just
right.
It's kind of mind-boggling, and the fact that, you know, they won't even hold public hearings on this issue.
Yeah, there should be a review on it at least and see what practices were handled, because obviously Sergeant Hennig was the superior there, and he's had problems in the past, I believe, too.
Do you have any sense, or can you give us any idea of past instances by Hennig? I know I've had encounters with Sergeant Hennig. He beat up a homeless man named Michael in 1990 that precipitated a huge demonstration, probably the only march against police brutality that ever came from the free meal,
uh-huh.
where Karen Gillette was serving food. Usually she doesn't stomach those kinds of demonstrations. She's very hostile to such things. But in this case, she herself, I think, was upset about it. We organized a demonstration. We marched to the police station. Police arrested four of us just for marching without a permit.
Right.
And Sergeant Hennig was accused of smashing this man into the, he was a musician who, you know, apparently didn't take kindly being told not to play music. He was playing a guitar on the avenue.
Really? He didn't like me when I played on the mall either.
Well, you know, you're different. You're pretty vicious. You know, your music is evil and, you know, really deserves, I would say, if not a shooting, at least a good slapping, you know.
Right. Well, he just grabbed my hand when I was playing, as I was playing. You know.
Sergeant Hennig did?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, Hennig
apparently filed a complaint against him, and of course it was, you know, it didn't, you know, of course Chief Belcher didn't see it my way. I was playing in front of Woolworths a couple years ago, and he walked up to me, and I guess it was a complaint from the guy that owned the hot dog cart down the street, and he came up and just grabbed my hand. And I said, excuse me, and then he just kind of twisted it a little bit, and then he decided to assert that he was going to give me a citation.
And did he cite you?
Yeah, he did.
What did he cite you for?
415.
Which is disturbing the peace.
Disturbing the peace of this one guy that got all upset.
What did the court do?
Oh, nothing. I got thrown out by the DA,
mm-hmm.
like all the rest of them.
So you've been repeatedly harassed on the street as a street musician. You play with the band called Just Kiddin', right?
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, we've heard your music.
No joke. Just Kiddin'.
Just Kiddin'.
Yeah, well, the whole thing about the police is that I know that all the officers probably wouldn't have handled this in the same way, but the sergeant was there, and he's the one, pardon the pun, calling the shots.
Uh-huh.
And he's the one that led the whole thing on, I'm sure. Heard Zemanek was there first, and then I don't know when Barry and Gracio and the sergeant arrived finally, but they knew who they were dealing with, and they knew they were going to have a confrontation with them. And so they geared themselves up, and they're all puffed up, and they pull out their guns and blow them away, and they're like not thinking, you know? And they're going to start work tonight at 5 o'clock. The three officers were, Gracio's been on the job. He just like supposedly hurt his fingers or whatever, but he's been working. But the other three officers are back on the job.
Do we have any confirmation? It would seem to me to be hard to fake Dominican hospital reports, but none of the witnesses I've spoken to have saw any of the officers fall to the ground hurt, struck with a bat, or have any indication that they were injured thereafter. They seem perfectly fine, including Sergeant Hennig, Gerasio, Zamanek, and Barry. Now, what do you have any reports of people who actually saw them injured or hurt?
No, I did see Gracio kind of sitting on a bumper, kind of, you know. But I'm sure after fucking 10 shots go off, everybody's going to be a little afraid. But
did you see if his fingers were injured in any way?
No, it didn't seem. He seemed just kind of upset or something.
But they could have been injured.
Yeah.
So we don't know. I mean, I would find it. I mean, if Dominican Hospital is in on some conspiracy, I would find that rather unlikely because their own reputation is at stake. Not out of the question, of course, but, you know, I mean, I'm prepared to believe that possibly the man even did strike them with a bat.
Yeah.
But the question as to whether, we also heard from Laurie Andrus, you may have heard the last part of that interview, and we're going to be repeating that at noon, Brian Andrus's wife, that there was not room to swing a bat inside the apartment. So it had to happen outside. So she thinks it unlikely that Gerasio was hit inside the apartment. Of course, you know, it could be that it was maybe he reached for the bat and he was a short swing or something.
Yeah.
So any of that could have happened. But even if it all happened the way the police said, it's obvious the whole thing was bungled. Just as the Happy John Dine case sounds like it was bungled, you know, from the very beginning. Carrie, you know, should have been told by Officer Over, his partner, that Happy John Dine was a mall regular who was kind of an eccentric.
Well, they could have at least talked to her a little bit nicer and waited outside. I mean, there was no shots heard, there was no glass breaking, there was just yelling that some supposedly a neighbor heard.
And when they were there, according to Laurie Andrus, as we heard earlier, the yelling had subsided, and they could also see her through the window, and then they could see her through the door.
Right.
They could talk to her. Instead, they chose to use police state Gestapo tactics, forcing their way into a house where they're not wanted, where there is no apparent crime in progress. And that, you know, is really what's going on all over town in terms of poor people, and I guess only now are middle class people beginning to see that. Because, you know, you saw it when Hennig comes up and grabs your hand from a guitar. That's not appropriate police procedure.
Right.
If he wants to give you a ticket, sure, he can give you a ticket. I mean, officers can do that. But to, you know, engage in some sort of physical abuse, and puts you in fear is, that's what they use in, you know, in Brazil, that's what they do in Serbia, that's the Chinese approach for the police department, and I'm not talking about ethnically, I'm talking about the governments.
Yeah, I know that there's some officers that, that are a little more level-headed than the force, you know, like, what's his name, the K-9 officer, not Brandt, Officer Brandt's a little hot-headed. But, God, what the hell is his name? I can't think of his name right now. But he's a little more level-headed and will be able to talk to you or something. You know, at least, like, tries to find a common ground rather than some cops just come up with their whole authority trip and just put it down on people, you know?
You know, I don't even think
it's a bad cop. Not, you know, the good cop, bad cop thing?
Mm-hmm.
There's too many bad cops.
Well, there's also there's a toleration of bad cops. That's the problem. I mean, you're always going to have, you know, police officers who are, you know, hot dogs and, you know, cowboys.
And all they have is their intimidation. Of course, they have guns and all things to kill us, but all they have to do to communicate with you is intimidate you into doing what they tell you to do, even if you're not even breaking the law. You know, like they just say you're hanging out here too long, and they'll, you know, like what happened with Officer Richards with Bruce last week, where
we had an interview coming up about Stickman Bruce in front of the Palace Stationery.
And he pulls his gun on somebody, telling him not to resist, telling the guy don't resist him, and the cop, back off. Officer Richards pulls a gun on Officer Richards. I don't know how old he is. He's like about 19 or 20. I don't know. He's very young, and there's a lot of very young, dumb, and full of cum cops on the force, and they got to be like, they gotta learn, they gotta, I don't know what it is, maybe they should do yoga or something, I don't know.
Well, if we had a police chief and a police review board and a city council that actually took officers to task,
right,
when they screwed up and also retrained them, you know,
right,
that might be something else. But if they're going to say simply everything's okay when a man is shot twice on the street,
right,
for allegedly having a toy gun,
right,
they're going to say everything's okay when a house is broken into by four police officers after the woman there has said everything is fine and they can see that she's not being hurt, you know, I mean, what can we do? You know, citizens have to take some kinds of action themselves, and I'm encouraging listeners to call in to the Citizens Police Review Board, and you can do that over the weekend at 429-3262. That's 429-3262. Leave a message that you want to file a complaint. You can call City Council at 429-3550. Again, this is a 24-hour message line, 429-3550. Not that these groups are people we should have confidence in, but if they start feeling the heat, they will probably have to respond.
All right, Robert. Well, I got to go.
Thank you, Bob.
And have a good show.
Hey, thank you.
Okay, bye.
And that was Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster Skidmark Bob. He's also a musician. He was calling in as a citizen. Actually, it was from Skidmark Bob that we first heard about the Button Street shooting. He happened to be in the area. He called Santa Cruzans for full disclosure, which I'm a member of.